morning department. We received an apology from the chairperson, Honorable Maswangani. He is not coming today. So as the rules of the National Assembly, Rule 159, the committee must elect an acting chairperson among its members that are available to them. So without wasting any time, I would allow him to nominate the acting chairperson for the day. Honorable Metubada.
Thank you, Secretary of the Committee. I hereby examine the Minister of Sadi, nominating Honorable Verma Lewis as an acting chair of the session. I so move.
Thank you, Honorable Dwazana. Is there a seconder for Honorable Verma?
Thank you, sir. Good morning, everyone. I second the nomination of Honorable Nivot, the chair of the day.
Thank you, Bob. Is there any other hand that wishes to come? In absence of one, Honorable Velma, do you accept? Congratulations, Honorable Velma. You can come forward and start the meeting. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. Thank you. I would like to welcome all entities present during their presentations today. I hope you feel welcome. We have apologies, as my colleague secretary said, the chairperson sends an apology. Any other apologies? Other apologies we have today is Honourable Ntombela and Honourable van der Walt and the Minister Lamini Zuma. Any other apologies? Okay. No other apologies. We'll continue. We're on point C of the agenda. NYDA. I see the NYDA, your slide is already, okay, there you are. I'm going to hand over to you to take us through the presentation. You have the microphone ready?
Okay, good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Thank you very much on behalf of the NYDA for the opportunity to present to you this morning. In terms of our agenda, this forms part of our quarterly reporting. We'll give the Honourable Members an update on the situational analysis of the agency at the end of quarter number two. We'll provide quarter two performance results, quarter two financial results, and we will present some youth labour market insights. For the Honourable Members. Afterwards, we will take questions. If we look at the situational analysis for quarter number two, we have achieved 77% of our key KPIs for the quarter under review, and we spent approximately 44% of our allocated budget. Honourable Chairperson, we've always indicated that given the demographic dividend of youth in the country and the budget of the NYDA, we've always enjoyed limited capacity, but we've not been sitting on our heels. We've continuously been making business cases to sectors of government, national treasury, and we are pleased that during the medium-term budget policy statement, through lobbying with treasury, the Minister of Finance allocated us in-year funding, an additional in-year funding of 31 million rand specifically for our grant program. And this will be used to address some of the demand and the young people who are in the pipeline that could not be approved due to lack of funding. We also continue our engagements with the provincial government. The KIA in the Free State has committed $1.5 million grant program. So really, we within a limited fiscus, we continue to push to we raise as much funding as possible. We think we've reached a point whereby we have matured products and services that are relevant to the needs of young people, and really taking these projects to as high a scale as is practically possible. During the second quarter, we made active contributions and participated both in the Job Summit and the Investment Summit. We've released position papers on what is activities in the labor market and capital markets, how it affects young people, and how the outcomes of these initiatives can really address the national crisis, which is youth unemployment. Chairperson, you also know that we have a vision of by 2020 having establishments in at least every district municipality. We are happy to say that so far we've already achieved 8 of our planned 17 district centres for this financial year under consideration. The additional item that I'd like to raise is to say when we had a vision for establishing these district centres, it was not only for NYDA centres, but we wanted these to become youth development centres of excellence. And in that regard, we've partnered with NASFAS to run the application scheme for higher education through our branches. And in the current financial year, more than 30,000 young people have passed through the branches and centers of the NYDA to register for the NASFAS program. So we're really trying to broaden access to young people through these centers that we're establishing. If we look at our quarter two performance, for the financial year under consideration, or for the quarter under consideration, we've met 77% of our targets. 6 of those have already been exceeded, and we've not met 5 of our targets. In program area 1, economic participation, out of a planned disbursement of 335, we've achieved 315, so we're quite close to where we need to be in terms of achievement. In terms of number of beneficiaries which are supported with business development services, we had a target of 9,900. We've achieved 9,938. In terms of number of jobs created or sustained, we had a target of 1,660. We've achieved 1,927. In terms of number of jobs placed, job opportunities, we had a target of 1,550. We've paid 3,000. We've approved project plans for the establishment of the NYDA Youth Fund and NYDA Skills Fund, which we presented to you during the discussion on the integrated youth development strategy. In terms of the next target, number of young people provided with youth development information, that target, as you'll remember when we presented our annual results, was slightly problematic with Auditor General. So we are behind on the target, but we have evidence which the Auditor General is checking, so we don't have a surprise as we had in the audit outcome last year. So they are verifying whether that evidence is, whether they are satisfied with the renewed evidence that was presented in terms of that target, and then we should be bringing it up back to achievement. Also with the number of traffic that we've seen through the NASFAS arrangement, that will also contribute positively to the target of providing young people with youth development information. In terms of the number of new service delivery centers established, as I've mentioned, we've established 7 centers up to the quarter end of September. In terms of number of public and private key stakeholders, lobbies for youth development, we had a target of 10 and we've achieved 15. In the area of education and skills development, in terms of our job preparedness and life skills training, we had a target of 36,000. We've achieved 38,596. We continue to implement the Solomon Mahlangu Scholarship Fund, although it will take on a different viewpoint given fee-free higher education, so we'll start to target sectors that are probably not covered by the free education announcement. In terms of customer satisfaction surveys, we've conducted the one survey that was required for the quarter under review. The next target is also not met. We presented the integrated youth development strategy to you last week. We set ourselves a target of developing a structure which can respond to the monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of the integrated youth development strategy. However, we know that there is continuous pressure on the compensation budget, not only in NYDA but also in the larger government. Therefore, we wanted to develop an ideal structure, given the fact that we lie within the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, so that we do not duplicate functions between entities here. So that target has been deferred to quarter number 4. We also plan to review the M&E framework and align it to the IYDS. That M&E framework was reviewed and approved during quarter number 2. In the area of NYS, our quarter 2 target was to develop approved protocols, procedures and coordination for the National Youth Service Program, which has been achieved. We've also finalized our facilitation rollout plan, and we've registered 30 National Youth Service projects for the quarter under review. We have 2 targets in NYS which are not met. For a number of young people registered in Category 1, the target was 4,000. We've achieved 1,621. For Category 2 and 3, our target was 37,500. We've achieved 25,000. When it comes to National Youth Service Project, we're very much dependent on project partners to partner with us and co-fund with us. We do have those partnerships in the pipeline. At times, it's pressurized to get signatures, to get projects signed off, which sometimes leads to our numbers falling behind. But we are confident that we've completed the necessary procedures and processes to bring those targets up to achievement by the end of quarter number 3. In terms of governance and administration, we've achieved 25% of our HR strategy. We've achieved 25% of our integrated marketing and communication strategy. And in terms of 30-day payments, we've paid 100% of legitimate service providers within the 30-day period. So all of the targets under governance and administration are met for the quarter under review. If we look at slightly beyond the numbers, we can see that we've given grants in different sectors. So for example, we've given 35 grants in the tourism sector, 37 grants in the manufacturing sector, 34 in the construction sector, 66 in the services sector, 30 in the arts and culture and creative arts space, 34 in the retail sector, 44 in the agriculture sector, and 35 in different other sectors. We are encouraged by those numbers, Chairperson, because often young people, the majority of the grants which were approved were generally in the services sector. There are still a lot in the services sector, but we're seeing a real uptick in sectors which are high growth for government, which is tourism, manufacturing and agriculture. So we are empowered that young people are entering into those kinds of businesses, but also succeeding in those kinds of businesses. If we look at our grant recipients by age, we'll see that the majority still fall within the larger age group category. So the majority are within the grouping 26 to 30 years old or 31 to 35 years old. Those make up 80% of our grant beneficiaries, generally because within those age groups they're more mature and able to take up the grant. We're seeing about a 21% uptake in the age group 20 to 25. In terms of jobs created and sustained, the majority of the jobs are being created through the grant program. That is directly aligned to the fact that the majority of the budget goes into the grant program. So 47% are being created through the grant program, 43% is being created through the business development services program, whereas 10% is being created by our market linkages program, which aims to give young people access to market. Once the access to market increases, they'll be able to create more jobs for their business. If we look at jobs created and sustained per age grouping, once again, this is more of an even spread. So within 31 to 35, 521 jobs, 26 to 30, 745 jobs, 20 to 25, 664 jobs. So we think jobs being created pretty much diversely across age grouping within the programs that we run. If we move into our financial performance for the year under consideration, there will just be a growth in the budget year on year. sorry, I think that's the bottom of the cutoff on the presentation. The budget is 480.8 million rand before taking into account the adjustment from the medium-term budget, which will reflect then during quarter number three. Out of that budget of 480.8 million rand, we spent 213.2 million rand, which equates to 44% of our annual budget spend. Our year-to-date budget is 225.4 million rand, of which we spent 213.2 million rand, which equates to 95% of the budget. If we provide honourable members with the budget analysis in terms of the differential line items that appear on our statement of financial performance, you'll see the relative breakdown per line item. In terms of goods and services, we spent about 133 million rand. Out of compensation, we spent 80.2 million rand, making up the 213.2 million. In terms of breakdowns per financial performance, approximately 42% of spending is going directly into youth development projects, 35% sits in the compensation budget, 16% goes into operations, and 77% sits on the capex budget of the NYDA. If we look at some of the youth labour market insights that we picked up during our program, and this is the work that we do in collaboration with some of our social partners in the youth development sector. We see that employment generally tends to increase with more education, right? But we still see that irrespective of education, young and low income or female work seekers find much more barriers for entry into jobs and to become economically active. If I show you the graph over there, you'll see three different bands. So the first one looks at young people, it looks at two age categories. One is ages 20 to 24, and the other one is ages 40 to 44. So if you look at the band of less than primary, in the age grouping 40 to 44, employment is almost close to 70%, whereas for younger people it sits at 40%. If we take matric as a minimum qualification, employment sits close to 80%, whereas for young people it sits at about 40%. And then even if we take tertiary education, you look at employment sits at 95% almost for those who have a tertiary qualification who are older, but it sits too at almost 60% for young people who have a tertiary qualification. Now this is a barrier that we sometimes refer to as work experience, because work experience is often blocking young people, irrespective of their education level, of being able to enter the economy. And it requires a different narrative of giving young people an opportunity, irrespective of where they start, so that we can absorb more young people into the economy and make them more economically active. If you look at another insight, is that young people face barriers in terms of job requirements and soft skills. Yeah? So if we look at, for example, the next slide there, it gives you a sense of the matric outcomes for 2017. And what you're looking at is the number of young people who write matric, the number of people who pass matric, the number that has a bachelor's pass, and the number that has a math mark at 40%. So you'll see, obviously, the ones that the last two columns, bachelor's pass and math at a minimum of 40%, is much lower than those who pass matric. Now, if we take young people, and if an employer advertises a job and says, at a minimum, they want a bachelor's pass or they want a matric at more than 40%, that job advertisement already excludes so many young people who may have passed matric during the previous year. Now, what that creates is that if you look at HR systems in the country, a lot of it is automated. So those young people, when they submit their CV, they're not even considered for a job that they may have applied for. But more and more, when we work with employers and when we consider, it goes beyond an education level. Or success in a job is measured beyond an education level. Factors such as resilience, ability to work in a team, collaborate, deal with conflict, are soft skills which are critical for success in the workplace. And if we look at what the OECD says, often there's a high level of mismatch in the employment space between what employees expect and what employees are able to deliver. So what NYD is doing is when we negotiate with employers, we ask them to look beyond what their current HR hiring requirements are. And to do alternative assessments which are able to assess cognitive functions but also soft skills that young people may possess so that they are able to be absorbed and they are able to succeed. Because while education is important, and I'm in no way downplaying the effect of education, the majority of learning takes place on the job. And if we can give young people access to that learning, we can make them more economically active. Just to share with you, for example, these are the type of projects. So in the Northwest, we negotiated with an employer called Clientele. They took 60 young people who would not have met the initial criteria, put them on a week-long training course, did assessments of their potential to succeed in a job, and we were able to place 60 of those young people as sales agents on full-time positions. And you'll see from that picture, the majority of those young people are women as well. So, in conclusion, there's no silver bullet which can solve youth unemployment. And often we refer to a massification of absorption into the economy. And while economic growth is critical in being able to place more young people in jobs, we still argue that there is a relevant demand for job opportunities in the current market. But we need to look at alternative paradigms for absorption of young people into the economy. And when I speak about this, it's changing the narrative, number one, amongst employers. But also, for example, we have lots of learnerships and internships in this country. But often we notice young people are not provided with the relevant certificates that they can claim that learnership or internship. Sometimes when you sit on a learnership or an internship or apprenticeship, that is not regarded as valid work experience. So even though a young person may have served time on an internship, they can't claim that it's work experience, which again creates another barrier for entry. And another trend that we tend to pick up is that ETAS findings. In our view, the majority of ETAS skills development training should go towards unemployed, unskilled people. Right? There is no point taking ETAS findings and training those who are already employed or those who may already have skills. So we need a better alignment between programs to ensure that we have a deliberate attempt to target unemployed young people and change the narrative around the labor market so that we can start to absorb more of these young people into the economy. Chairperson, thank you very much. I will leave it to you.
I see the Deputy Minister has arrived. Honourable Deputy Minister, welcome. Deputy Chair of NYDA, I can't see where you're sitting, can't see, there you are. Welcome, welcome. And before I give over to the Honourable Members, I would like to find out if the Honourable Deputy Minister has anything to say with regards to the NYDA presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to members, good morning to members of the entity. Basically, I'm just to let you know that I was coming in and out, I was just going to go.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Minister. And Deputy Chair of NYDA, anything you would like to say before we give the chance to honourable members for questions?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the microphone.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to honourable members. An excuse for coming later, just flew in today, and there's so much traffic here in Cape Town. You stay with each other. I just want to say, I think the CEO has covered everything on the report, but there's still standing issues around how, I said, let's start by appreciating that there's an additional support of money towards grants, which was roughly about 80 million. However, we'll need more to massify some of the programs, particularly around SMEs that are started by young people and all the necessary support that is going to be. On the issue of skills that the report, our report raised, it's correct that we are not focusing the skills training to the young people that are not skilled. And probably we need to take a different approach and suggest that we start saying, when we deal with CETAS starts focusing on young people that are not skilled, or could we say young people that have not passed the matric. But also get some sort of a cooperation from the side of CETAS, because the CEO will know and many other people. We've been doing a lot of work around trying to get young people skilled, but I think the slowness in terms of participation from the side of the CETAS when it comes to collaboration with the NYDA, I think is one thing that probably from the side of the committee we can get support with. In fact, we've made an attempt last week to call them into a meeting. Only 4 out of the 21 could spare time. The rest were giving excuses like they have this meeting and that meeting, and they cannot make it to a meeting that seeks to get collaborations with them. We're still going to make further attempts to actually have conversations with the CETAS. And I think at the current state CEO, we only have, I think, 2 collaborations with CETAS. The rest are either not responsive or not willing to participate in collaborations with the NYDA. I think those are smaller challenges that one will have to deal with now and again when it comes to issues of skills. And it will always be appreciable if there are people who are willing to engage certain institutions like those to assist. But also, with all the skilling, there's always the other part, which is job placement or market linkages. When we train, where can we place them? And that's the discussion that can never be left out when we discuss it again. I think those are just the 2 emphases that I wanted to make. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Board Chair. Honourable members, this is now your opportunity for questions, comments on the NYDA presentation. Honourable Khoza, then Honourable Mutau.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks, NYDA, for the presentation. Chairperson, I just want maybe to start by saying I'm seriously touched by the comment from Chairperson, that we have got CETAS that are really not interested in assisting. I don't know, Chairperson, what do we do from now? How do we engage with the CETAS to ensure that maybe they are able to avail themselves to the NYDA in order to assist the situation? I think it is very serious in order for NYDA to achieve their objectives. If we do not come in to assist, really, I don't see us getting out of the trouble that we're in today. Chair, having said that, I'm just having 2 issues to raise with the presentation. Firstly, I want to check with regard the establishment of the district centers. You have reported about 8 of them. I wanted to know as to what extent will that affect your budget, more especially with regard to the compensation of the people that you will be employing. Question is how many people will be employed, and of those that will be employed, how many will be permanent and how many will be on a temporal or contract basis? And lastly, to those who will be employed in the district, municipal district, who will be responsible for their compensation? The second question is with regard to the curricular design by the Department of Basic Education. What role is played by the NOED? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Just to say thanks. The situation analysis is absolutely good, and it's what is happening, as you probably know. That's why you're raising it. And I would like to encourage you guys to, you know, identify the stumbling blocks. You know, all those issues that you've raised. Now what you need to do is come up with what you're going to do about it, what you need to do so that these things can be taken out of the way. Because they're absolutely critical that some of those ideas that you have there should come into the play so that we can move this thing forward. Just a small question. At the beginning of your presentation, where you were talking of young entrepreneurs, you had targeted 335. You managed to assist 315. There's 20 lacking there. I'm just curious, was it because you ran out of funds or you ran out of good applicants? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Chair. And thank you very much for the presentation from the MRG. I'm just going to follow on what Honorable Okosa just said, because it is the main one. And I'm happy that Honorable Okosa is in the Portfolio Committee for Education. Now, I'm coming with a proposal, Chair, to the NYDA, that the Chair of the NYDA and the Deputy Chair of the NYDA and the CEO, they meet with the Minister of Higher Education and the Basic Education. Because seemingly, it's like now, it appears, it's my assumption that it's like the NYDA has to beg our department facilities that are available, which is not supposed to be, because all what they are trying to do, they are trying to put the service at the doorstep of the youth. So I am proposing that before even the parliament closed, let the NYDA secure the meeting. If they've got a problem, they need to come back to you, Chair, so that you assist them. You meet with the minister. And they need to tell us about that, the sector's money. Because that money always comes back as being underspent. But also, NYDA, it's unfortunate that the deputy minister is just left. You are not utilizing the School of Government, which was being headed by Professor Levine, who is now the DG of the DPA. Use it. That School of Governance is sitting at 187 million that you have allocated. Those are my just the proposal that you have to do that, because that's what you've got to have more money.
Thank you. No other comments from members. I have a few questions, and I completely support what Honourable Causa said about the CETAs. It's a huge concern because so I've been looking at Facebook or watching on Facebook. There's a Facebook page for people with disabilities. and there are advertisements there from companies who know nothing about people with disabilities, so the companies get funding to give learnerships. So then they ask, where are the disabled people? And then they get the names of disabled people. But many organizations who work directly with people with disabilities don't want to give the database to these companies, because these companies know nothing about disability, but they get the funding for people with disabilities. But they, you know, they don't know anything. So NGOs who work with people with disabilities, their funding is decreasing rapidly, but the other funding is going to these companies who just suddenly pitch up and know nothing about disability. So NYDA, what could you do in terms of that scenario to assist? And I know the NYDA doesn't have the capacity to go to all the schools, but like Matula Zani suggested, that you meet with the ministers of basic education. And does NYDA have any connection with the student body government association? Maybe meet their chairperson. Tell them about the matric student struggles, the barriers that they face, the challenges to access. They need to improve the matric qualifications, etc. Maybe you can have a meeting with the SGD association. The district centres that we have established, 7 centres, where are they, well, which provinces are they in? And that would be all. Thank you. Over to you for the answers.
Okay, thank you very much, honourable members. Chairperson, let me start off with the district centre. So, in terms of the model that we're pursuing, is we know that the baseline is not increasing fundamentally. We very much appreciate the adjustment in the medium-term budget policy statement. But the strategy that we follow in terms of deepening access is to say, we will not pay for rent, so we collaborate with local municipalities to give us rent-free office space. And then, in terms of the HR capacity, these offices have typically 3 to 4 people working in them. So it's a very small structure that we operate in at the moment. We're trying not to create new positions. So let's say you have a branch in Cape Town, you're opening a district center in Saldanha Bay, we'll take a person from Cape Town to run that branch for us. So we're trying as much as possible not to create new positions, because we don't want to exceed the compensation ceiling which we presented to you of 35%. But what we try and do is we say to provincial governments is that instead of you conceptualizing a whole new youth development program from scratch, we have these programs, we have monitoring and evaluation which shows they work. So we will bring an NYDA center, we'll transfer our employees in there, but assist that with transfer payments so that we can fund these offices with products and services. So that's kind of the model we're trying to follow, deepen accessibility. And I must say, provincial governments have come on board. KwaZulu-Natal has given us an allocation, Free State, Limpopo. I'm told the Eastern Cape is also making a commitment towards us as well. So we seem to be creating this lobbying advocacy environment to attract youth development. In terms of the provinces, I think we'll do a presentation for you on which ones we've established. But we've done in Limpopo, Sekhukhune district, we've done Free State, Welkom, we've done one in the Western Cape as well, Northwest, Mahikeng, Gauteng, Sedibeng, and Kuruleni. So we're pretty much spread across there. And we're trying to target every province incrementally so that we reach every district by 2020. In terms of curriculum design for basic education, to respond, if you read the NYDA Act, we are responsible for, in terms of our mandate for young people between the ages of 14 and 35. So at basic education primary level, to be perfectly honest, we don't play much of a role there. Could we in future? I suppose, but we've always been afraid of spreading ourselves too thin and being jack of all trades but master of none. To respond to the Honourable Mutau, these are indeed stumbling blocks, and a lot of it is changing the narrative around it. So it's negotiating with employers, it's talking to private sector collaborative groups, it's talking to DPSA in terms of how they hire for the public sector. And eventually, if we really need to break down these barriers, perhaps we need to consider passing policy, which is favorable to young people and which favors greater absorption into the labor market. In terms of the proposals, we will certainly take up, I think, National School of Government is a key partner that we can utilize. I think the university students is also a very key proposal that we could utilize to improve outcomes at the basic education level. And lastly, to speak about disabled youth, I think two critical sectors that I've identified where we need to play a bigger role is disabled youth and youth who are in conflict with the law. So I've requested that Disabled Youth South Africa come and make a presentation to the next NYDA board meeting on how we can better support young people in the disabled space. We've taken steps such as ensuring that our training manuals are available in Braille, that our training centers are disabled friendly, so that we don't deny access to disabled young people, especially as it relates to the NYDA products and services. But I agree we can do more to broaden accessibility beyond the NYDA as it relates to wider government and the private sector. Honourable Chairperson, I will think I've responded to the majority of the questions. If the Deputy Chair wants to add anything.
Thank you. Thank you to you all for responding to some of the questions. Honourable Chair, I think, and honourable member, on the issue of student representatives and SGB, we have an access to the South African Union of Students, which is a union of all student representatives in the country, but it's focusing only on the university one. SGBs, I think it's a link that we must also interact with, particularly to share some of our own insights in terms of analysis on the youth and the status of the youth, taking into account that we already have the status of the youth report. Probably these two will follow. And the suggestion to meet with the ministers of higher education and basic education to discuss some of the issues, particularly around the issue of status. I think the reality about expanding access is that there will always be a need for more money to do that. I am confident that when the honourable members from the time we were coming here for interviews, we were participating there, they were saying we must expand access. They also understood that call for expanding access to the NYDA also means a call for the expansion of budget, particularly where human capital is concerned. So we are trying to minimize it, as the CEO has explained, by trying to get the deals of rent and free, getting government to contribute money. But the reality that we must deal with is that we don't even have enough staff to actually cover the 54 municipalities. So we only probably send two from the existing staff and have to employ about two. And at some point it will make a dent on the amount that we spend on the staffing, and those are some of the things that come with expansion, and we are hoping that at some point our budget will be much bigger, such that when you look at the staff we have, you start complaining that we have too minimal staff, and we're hoping that some of the proposals that we'll bring before the committee will support us in terms of how else we can raise money. Because we also are always thinking of most better and innovative ways of getting money towards youth development. And I can say that the discussion that we started is that we look at the issue of the CSI where there's already money that are towards challenges in our own societies from private sector. And probably 50% of that money will make a huge difference. And if you may allow me indulging share, when you look at that amount, I think on the 2016 report of the JSE, the top 100 companies make about 808.6 billion, and if you can take half of that money to traders just to look at the issues of youth development, the cries of a small budget towards the youth development, not just the NYDE alone, but the other components as well that must do it, like civic organizations, we will not find ourselves complaining the much we do in terms of the amount. Those are some of the things, that those are some of the proposals that will come on board at some point that will need a bit of support from the committee and the honorable member. I think also the issue of district centers, it's an open exercise that we're doing and engaging different municipalities, and where honorable members can engage district municipalities working with us, we also appreciate that exercise. Sometimes it makes a difference when government representatives speak to each other. They will quickly agree to some of the things compared to probably the amount of discussions that they will direct with us. But we've been getting good responses, and most district mayors are now approaching to say, look, I hear that this, so can I also come on board? On the curriculum design, the truth is that we'd love also to be part of that, because the basic education curriculum determines the quality of a young person that will produce after 30 years in the basic education system. And it will always be of interest to know what we invest there in terms of the knowledge that is deposited to those young people. And some of the challenges that I think we raised in the situational analysis come from the type of basic education that we have. And we would really love to have an opportunity to make a contribution on the curriculum design from the side of basic education. Because I think it will assist us to, you know, share our own insights on some of the challenges that we have to deal with when young people have completed the basic education run of education, and probably be able to say, let's make, you know, a few changes. And I think I want to end it there, because the one of students of School of Government will pursue, I'm sure, that because we need that kind of... On the youth with disabilities, like the CEO has said, let's also get them to country. But I also think there are a bit of challenges. We meet them now and again, but I think you end up dealing with the very same person that you've met. We love them to also, you know, be as a representative, such that when you assist, you don't only assist that one person that you think they haven't been able to reach, either the NYDA or any other institution of government, but that it be more of an open arrangement where they are able to take whatever information you give back there. Because what I think is also a challenge is that when you meet with the young people living with disabilities, the information never flows back to where it's supposed to go. And probably a presentation will allow more of a structural arrangement to come and have a conversation with us and be interact at that level and also reach as many young people as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Chair, for your response, and NYDA, thank you for the presentation. We take note of all the concerns, the barriers that you experience. As MPs, we do support you in the work that you do and continue doing. I'm very happy to say that the NYDA is more visible from province to province and district to district, so the youth know the work and the assistance that they can get from the NYDA as well. So thank you very much for your presentation. Point number four on the agenda is Statistics South Africa, and I see the Statistician General is here. Welcome, you and your team. I'll give over to you to present to us on your second quarter report.
Thank you, Chairperson. I suppose that you will have received our booklet, our book that we bring every quarter, which looks like this, which we circulate every month. Members of honorable members should not be too concerned about the expenditure. It's quite nominal to bring the book in half because we have a lot of products that we want to bring. Let's get straight to the presentation, and we are moving from what we reported during quarter one that, in relation to the target towards the annual target. So what we said then was that we had achieved 18% of the annual target, of which 80% were on track during quarter one. And the expenditure was 2%, and the cancel rate of 15%. And this figure that we have been able to move of staff members with disabilities of 1.2%, and of course 41% as a now, SSA has about 587 targets, annual targets. And those targets account for between 265 and 300 releases. So almost daily, we have a release that goes out. It's just that some of the releases don't get as much media attention, but they continue to be released. Let us look at quarter two. In relation to quarter two, we have moved from what we were in quarter one by 20 percentage points from 18% to 8%, and of course we are 60% on track in relation to our progress towards annual targets, and of course 2.3% of those are delayed. And we are looking at 46% expenditure. The vacancy rate has moved from 15%. We remember, Chairperson, at the end of the financial year 2017-2018, the vacancy rate was sitting at 13.9%, and then last quarter it was sitting at 15%. Now it's sitting at 15.8, approximately 16%. The staff members with disability, we have moved from this number that we haven't moved for so many years. We are now sitting at 1.4%, and we are making a concerted effort to want to address this matter. Women in SMS still sitting at 41%, and of course this, the women in SMS are sitting on 41%, whereas women in the organization account for 53.5%. Now, let us look at progress against quarter two target. So the previous slide was talking about what is it that we are making towards the annual target. Now in quarter two we achieved 93% as scheduled, and of course 5% was delayed. And furthermore, let us look at the organizational actual spending, which we have already reported that we are sitting at 46%, and different programs have accounted for different levels of expenditure. And of course, our program 4 is accounting for 54%, which is the highest expenditure, and the lowest is program 3, accounting for 30%. This is due to the fact that we run in project mode. So project mode doesn't account for your quarterly arrangement, but we do monitor our budget so that we don't go out unnecessarily. But the project do matter from time to time, because we may have in one program budgeted to or thought we would spend it at approximately 50%, but because of our project nature, it's not always easy to align. Now, we are saying that about 87% of our staff members are Black African, and of course 6.1% are white, and 5.4% are colored, and 1.7% are
Indian, Asian, and of course, as I've indicated, 53.5% is accounted for by female employees, and 46.5% is accounted for by male employees, which then becomes an anomaly, because when you go to SMS, the women are not as much, so they are in lower echelons of the organization, a matter that we have started to focus a lot more closely to. Now, we are looking at the vacancy rate, and we are looking at vacancy rate in relation to different areas. Administration has the highest vacancy rate, sitting at about 26%, economic statistics sitting at 13%, and of course 20% in population and social statistics. I need to mention that economic statistics, population and social statistics, and methods and standards and research are the core of our business. So whatever we do, where we sit with economic statistics and social statistics, all the products that we are talking about in statistics, they come from those two clusters. And methods and standards is responsible for making sure that the veracity of our numbers and the methods that we follow are of international acclaim. And of course, statistical support and statistical collections and outreach and survey operations provide more of a backbone of support in terms of the technical nature, which we separate from corporate services. And of course, our vacancy rate is sitting at 15.8%, closer to 16%. Key achievements against the strategic outcomes for quarter two. We published 64 statistical releases and reports on the economy and the society, and of course, we commenced with Centers of the Commercial Agriculture, which is VAT-paying agricultural units, and this is, we are doing it with the Department of Agriculture. The money is not recommended on our budget board, but comes from the Department of Agriculture. We released the statistical report for the KwaZulu-Natal Citizen Satisfaction Survey using digital technology for collection, and this was released on the 24th of August on the program. What we had agreed when we sat with the KwaZulu-Natal province was that we would collect and release the report on the 17th of August. So on the 10th of August, we called the Premier of KwaZulu-Natal and said, we are ready with your report. We are only looking for time to make it available, because all statistical releases must be released by the Statistician General. So they gave us a date of the 24th, which was 7 days later. But all our programs, we adhere to deadlines, because the economy is ticking and the society wants to know. And of course, this was the second one KwaZulu-Natal conducted, the only province ever to conduct the citizen satisfaction survey, which is a user-paid survey. So it's based on what provinces can pay. And I was reading in the newspapers yesterday, I have learned that all along we thought provinces do not have money, but I learned that Gauteng has just released their citizen satisfaction survey. So we will be engaging them, because it will cost at this juncture, in terms of relation to numbers, if certain numbers are done outside the rubric of official statistics. I've seen through media reports the number of questions they have asked, and I know we have worked with Gauteng before in terms of the kind of perception questions that can go and which ones cannot be viewed as perception questions. We compiled the 2018 poverty line, which we released in July 2018, and of course one of the things that we also do regularly in first July is to release the population estimate, media population estimate. And of course, we published the General Household Survey Environment report focusing on solid waste and services and recycling. And of course, we further went to publish the gender report, gender studies looking at economic empowerment. As regards the Centers of Agriculture, we signed an MOU with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and of course we conduct the national survey, which is already in field. The Department of Agriculture will develop its farmer register, which we will assist them. We assist a lot of departments in terms of adhering to statistical methods when they are collecting their data. the stakeholder consultations occurred across the whole country, and of course we established partnerships with the agricultural unions as well as all gatekeepers in the form of the police. In the farming community, when you want to access the farming community, you need to know the protocols of going through their organized agricultural unions, as well as talking to their neighborhood watch, as well as talking to police stations. And in my work also, and all the colleagues seated here, senior colleagues, we do go out to field from time to time, because all of us entirely, instead of saying, were field workers before we became senior managers. So in going to the field, we engage in the challenges in relation to the work that we are doing on the commercial agriculture. The fact that there is a discussion, a national discussion on expropriation of land without compensation. We are seen as not being independent enough, the fact that we are collecting this census, data on this census now. Truly, we should have collected this data in 2012, but the Department of Agriculture didn't have money. So we have previously collected in 2002, 2007, we should have gone to field in 2012. So 2017 was within our program, and of course, this is the message we are driving. We have a bit of resistance here and there, but we also have a lot of support from the farming community, who we work with well on other sample surveys other than this one, because we collect a lot of information. General household surveys, quarterly labor force surveys, we collect out there. We have a very good working relationship. So data collection commenced on the 15th of October 2018, and the reference period is 2017. And of course, this data, part of the information the farmers do not have, because we ask the structure of ownership. So we want to know whether the ownership is in relation to a trust or single ownership. But as to who owns that, that doesn't matter. What matters the most is the structure of ownership, because it plays a role in understanding the way the economy works. And in the end, when you look at the system of national accounts, you need to know those things. We look at the issues of the financing, the size of financing, and the farmers usually don't keep this information kept by their bookkeepers, so we are able to be referred to their bookkeepers. We also want to know the state of employment. And as we will know, research agencies use this information. Investments, when people want to invest in the agriculture sector in South Africa, they need this information. No investor can come in and invest in an industry like mining, manufacturing, or agriculture without knowing the status and the state of the sector. So these become very critical. And for ourselves, as said, we use this information, as you know, every now and then we report on our GDP, national account. We always need to tell how agriculture is performing. And of course, in relation to our quarterly labor force survey, we have to talk about how agriculture is performing. So this data is very critical for the nation. Now let us look at the KwaZulu-Natal Citizen Satisfaction Survey. The number one priority in KwaZulu-Natal, where the people of KwaZulu-Natal raise as things that are, they want to see happen, which are concerning them. They want to see job creation. They want jobs. The people of KwaZulu-Natal want housing as their second priority, and of course they want the government to fight corruption as their priority number three. This is an overall picture, but when we looked and unpack this in relation to men and women, the women of KwaZulu-Natal raised as their number two priority education. They said, give us education. So are the young people of KwaZulu-Natal. They said, second priority, give us education. Now, this is a map of those that were outright. So the blue color are those that were outright satisfied with the services that are coming, or with the provincial government in KwaZulu-Natal. And you can see that the brown one tells us those who were outright dissatisfied. So if you look at your northern part of KwaZulu-Natal, which is traditionally what used to be homeland, you see a lot of outright dissatisfaction as opposed to outright satisfaction. And I must say, Chairperson, that in case you do not know how I became the distinguished general, even my Sangoma comes from Sarialingan up there in northern KwaZulu-Natal. But let us look at what the no person chair goes and consults a Sangoma in their neighborhood. So I wouldn't have consulted one in here. I had to go to KwaZulu-Natal. But back to the presentation, let us look at the performance of the provincial government. I want us to look at the brown versus the blue color. The dark blue color on the right hand side is talking as outright satisfied. The light blue is somehow satisfied. The light brown is somehow dissatisfied, and the dark brown is outright dissatisfied. Now, the people of KwaZulu-Natal seem to be a lot more satisfied with the provision of basic education, the provision of health care. As we can see, the lighter, the blue colors are actually claiming much of the space. But the darker brown at the bottom indicated that they were worried about the eradication of fraud and corruption, as well as enhancing entrepreneurship and SME, and of course promoting accountable government. And we can see that those, the brown colors in the lower echelon, are actually showing a lot more concern. Promoting agriculture, previously we have seen the people of KwaZulu-Natal partaking actively in agriculture, especially at small scale or smallholder farming. But we can see now that they are raising a concern in terms of promoting agriculture. In relation to services where people were outright satisfied, but they also viewed them as very important. We can see that municipal clinic services was the one where we had the narrowest gap, where people were, they viewed it at 68% as being important, but they were also satisfied. And we should remember that the people of KwaZulu-Natal have said they are very satisfied with the health services that they are being provided with from the provincial government. But of course, let us look at road maintenance, which is at the bottom. The people said they are 65% very, thinking that it's important. But in terms of being satisfied, they were sitting at 23%. So those potholes that we find out there in some of the roads in KwaZulu-Natal are actually showing here. So it's affordable housing. They are saying it's 66% important, but in terms of affordability, and we are sitting at 60%. Now, let us look at poverty, which is one of the reports that we make available to the country. The National Development Plan says we must track the lower bound poverty line to understand how the nation is doing in terms of eradicating poverty. Coming out of 2006, where we were sitting at 61%, and 2009 at 47%, 2011 at 36.4%. We are still poverty starting to creep in. So coming out of 2011, we can see a rise again in poverty. We didn't bring the slides for the provinces, but only two provinces seem to have done well in fighting poverty. That is the Northern Cape as well as Mpumalanga. They actually have lowered poverty. The others are starting to go on the rise in relation to poverty. But we have a glitch. One of the things that the country is tracking is unemployment, poverty, and inequality. And as we can see here, Chairperson, we last reported in 2015. So we are in 2018, we can't report, and I will come to that why we can't report. I want to first talk on this line. We can see that the inflation-adjusted lower bound poverty line, we have actually been tracking it from 2006. So what we do is, when we look at poverty, even when we have gone back to field to recalibrate our numbers, we are able to factor in inflation, because poverty does take consideration of inflation. So we can say from 2006, where the lower bound poverty line was sitting at 370 rand, And now we are sitting at 785 rand. And we will remember that this poverty line was used heavily when the government had to decide in terms of what they would be giving in terms of the grant, especially to children. It would not be sustainable, of course, but this is not our space to say that if we were to pay 785 rand. But we cannot hide the fact. Our role as state is not to look at what government can afford or will not afford. It's to always illuminate the issues where the challenges and the issues where they are. We are like Mulana Chairperson. Mulana lost a coin, and then he was found looking for a coin under a lamp. And they asked Mulana, "Is this the place where you lost your coin, Mulana?" He said, "No, I didn't lose my coin here." "So why are you looking for the coin there?" He said, "This is the only place where there is life." So we always illuminate issues where the challenges and the progress is. But as we can see, we can tell the nation that because we release the CPI every month, we can do an inflation adjustment up to 2018. This 785 rand is an amount of 2018. Now let's go back to the previous slide. The percentage of those that are poor only ends in 2015. It's because we haven't been funded. We have gone to National Treasury to ask for funding for our income and expenditure survey. Because you cannot estimate the number of people who are poor unless you know what they earn and what they spend on in their lives. So because we do not know this figure, and it's not a figure that we can use inflation to adjust, because we need to know the basket of goods. So this figure will not move. So if we don't get funding for the income and expenditure survey, it means that even 10 years from now, South Africa will still be referring to a 2015 number of poverty, because certainly they cannot do anything. And it's not a matter that we can just estimate out of the blue. We must go and conduct an income and expenditure survey from the society. The people must tell us what they are earning, and the people must tell us how they are spending. If we do not have this, but this is not the only problem. If we do not have the basket of goods, it means that in the long run, there are other things that are creeping in. If we look at, Lotto was not there 20 years ago. When Lotto was introduced, it started forming part of the basket of goods because people are spending all their money on Lotto. If we look at data, people used to buy at high more, but now they buy more data bundles. So data bundles are coming in. So unless we go and know what the people are spending on, we cannot go and estimate it. We must know, and we must. We don't produce what we think. We produce what has happened in the society. But as regards the multidimensional poverty line, which is not an official number line for the country, and I must hasten to say that when we come back to report on the current quarter, we will also inform the nation that we just hosted an international meeting. We host a lot of international meetings. And we just hosted one on the multidimensional poverty line. And we are thinking that we should make a recommendation to cabinet to consider tracking the multidimensional poverty line. Because when you look at the previous line that we have given, where it says 40% of the people are poor, it's the money method. Your $2 a day per household. Now this one is where government intervenes in the form of fee-free schools, which you, when you go to the household will not know how much government has subsidized the household. It's your feeding schemes, your free water and electricity services from the municipalities for indigent households, as well as the grants that come in. So those ones, we are able to collect the information from the centers of municipalities, as well as from the budget that the government is actually intervening. And we are pleased to say that our number is sitting at 7%. The SAMPI, South African Multidimensional Poverty Index, is sitting at 7%, which is the same one as the global or the international poverty line. But this is the only time that the Statistician General may have taste buds, because the matters of poverty come close to everyone's heart. the statistician general should never be pleased with any number. Whether a number is high or low, the statistician general must make it public to everyone to know all the time. Now, in terms of key achievements, strategic achievements, let us look at trusted statistics. We had 635,000 visitors in this quarter visiting our statistics in terms of electronic visits by way of website as well as walk-ins. So we are keeping a record of everyone. We wouldn't be a statistics agency if we can't measure who visits us. So we know who visits us, but we do not make public their information. We always tell the nation how many people visited us. And some just visited the website, they never actually downloaded anything. There were 105,000 downloads. And of course, we had a joint statistical publication for the BRICS Summit, which we just concluded last year. And of course, we are continuing with the CAPIC quality assurance to enhance our automation of our work in terms of going digital. So the CAPI is in the past. We have been going largely on paper-assisted interviews. What we are doing now is we are using computer-assisted interviews in the form of using tablets and all these gadgets that we have in the market, which make it easier, but it changes our model of operation. In the past, when you work with paper, if you have every field worker collecting 100 pieces of paper, you need a supervisor who must check every 10 questionnaire samples to be able to check the quality. And you also need a quality assurer who sits in the field. So what it means now is once a field worker collects and presses a send button, our quality assurers and those who deal with verification sit in a central point and they check the data. But we also don't have to worry about issues of spelling, which we used to work a lot on edit. Because you can expect, if we have 30,000 field workers out there, every field worker has their own handwriting, we have to deal with that. So it's actually a lot more easier to deal with that. And of course, we are dealing with a preparatory work for the quarterly labor force parallel run. Parallel testing is a thing that any statistical agency must do when you are dealing with sample surveys. When you deal with a census, you can easily plunge yourself into any technology and you hope you will get it right. But with sample surveying, because you use, and in our case, we use 30,000 households for estimation at sub-national level of the province. This is not a place where you take a risk. So what we do before we introduce technology, we must collect on paper and run another parallel survey collecting on digital. And we go and compare line for line, attribute for attribute, to make sure that we don't break series, because it's an offense for which the statistician general should be locked in jail if he has broken series and he hasn't informed the public of South Africa that we are breaking series. Because breaking series it means whatever we have collected following particular methods, if that has changed and the users and the public do not know, future generations will not be able to use our statistics for backcasting as well as for forecasting going forward in terms of planning. And of course, the census will go digital. We are busy testing in terms of our digital collection in different modes. But it's one of the things that we are prepared to plunge in, because you cannot run parallels on a census. We run it once every 10 years. Now let us look at partners in statistics. Firstly, it's, we dealt with the preparations for the 13th ASSD, which is the African Symposium on Statistical Development, which we launched and hosted here in Cape Town in 2006. And we have presided on since then, and we have just handed over to Ethiopia to be chairperson while we keep the secretariat. This is a country led, so it's not led by the African Union, it's not led by the ECA, it's led by countries with South Africa at the core of it. We have hosted Namibia and supported Namibia, especially with their labor market statistics. We have hosted the African Development Bank in terms of statistical capacity building, and of course, we have hosted the Ministry of Energy from Botswana to understand the way we use gadgets in terms of data collection. We continue to deal with consultative meetings in relation to the SDG report. As we will remember that last year in 2017, we prepared our baseline report, which we made available to the United Nations. Now what is happening is next year we have to report, South Africa has to report. Now what we used to have at the United Nations, we used to have government presenting its report and civil society, Sangoko, and then we present another report. But what we have done as Special State is to consult both governments. So we work with government departments, we have formed user groups, which include members of the civil society, who we follow everywhere in every neighborhood. So you talk of Masisi, Kubatuba, Kuruman, and everywhere. We meet with members of civil society and engage them on what we are getting as reports. So we have started with sending one report to the United Nations, which actually eliminates embarrassment to our state as in South Africa. But one of the things that we deal with is the capable organization, which we are busy dealing with the legislative reform, which we have briefed this committee, honorable members, about 2 weeks ago. We continue to deal with reporting. We have published our annual report, which we came to report to this committee, and of course, dealt with issues of strategic alignment in terms of prioritization. So what we are saying is that we will try and sustain basic statistics at all costs. And I'll come to that all costs. At all costs, even if it's difficult, we will sustain basic statistics. So one of the things we have done is we have done priorities and removed some of the nice to have. It's nice to have, if you would say, because we used to write a report after releasing a QLFS or anything, we used to write a report to assist the country to digest the numbers. So those things we can no longer be able to do in some areas because we don't have staff members to do the work. But our vacancy rate is sitting at 15.9, closer to 16%. And of course, we continue to deal with the transformative agenda of transforming society both materially and in terms of form. So the whole issue of empowering women, people with disability, but also in terms of the work that we do technologically, we need to deal with that. And of course, we hosted the accelerating women's participation in the mainstream economy in Limpopo, and of course the public service women's management participated in SSA. And of course, in terms of transformation, we are looking at stakeholders. Our stakeholders are shifting. There is more demand for more information and refined information, especially at lower levels or lowest levels, at geographic level, as well as in terms of refining the beat of information. So we need to respond with our statistical products, and we need to make sure that our systems and processes respond accordingly, and we are going technological. That is on the side of the business. In terms of the human side, we are busy reskilling our staff members, we are dealing with structures and shared values, and of course, instead of meeting twice per year for strategic planning, the management team has to meet 4 times a year because every staff member will resign. Every month we lose staff members. We have to refine our way and our methods of doing business. Now, what is at risk? The whole issue of demand for statistics is at risk. At national and continental level, we continue to report, but at sub-national level, we are facing a serious risk. We are reporting at global level and to other agencies, like we are on SDDS, which the IMF has interest in our work, and of course the ADB, but of course we know once the IMF is satisfied with what we are doing on the SDDS, it fuels what the rating agencies, we don't deal with rating agencies as statistics, but it fuels their perception about the work that we do. The severe budget cuts are affecting us. The income and expenditure survey, we are not being funded. So the poverty estimate, as I've indicated, has been impacted. The CPI basket is being impacted. So at some stage, our reserve bank will not be able to get a reliable number on our consumer price index. And if they can't get a reliable number, the biggest risk we are facing is that the repo rate that they announce will not be based on reliable facts, because we rely on the income and expenditure survey to come with a basket of goods. GDP estimates are going to be impacted. We don't think it will be now, but in another 4 or 5 years, we are already seeing a risk on the GDP. In terms of staff members, we have 33 staff members leaving in quarter one. We have 29 staff members that have left. Our staff members are demanded by reputable organizations. Our head of data and methods has been taken over in the Pacific Nations. There is a body that manages the Pacific Nations, has been hired there. Our head of labor market statistics has been taken by Statistics Australia. Our head of vital statistics has been taken by the World Bank, and two of them with PhD have been taken by the World Bank. The IMF is busy knocking at our door. They already have started to entice some of our staff members. And if you ask me, the banks are taking our staff members, especially from economic statistics. They are taking our staff members at risk. People are taking them at the pay. So the people we are losing here, it's not like your normal data collector. Data collectors we can replace readily. But your methodology, your statistician, it takes 5 to 10 years to train a statistician in class. It takes another 8 years to make them seasoned. So if you ask me, I've worked nowhere all my life. All my 26 years of service in my life, I've worked in a statistical agency, nowhere else. So it takes my colleague Ashwell here, who is also a statistician, he has worked nowhere else except working for the forest since a bit, but he came to work for statistics. So when we lose people at our level who have 20, 10 years experience, it's not something you can replace overnight. It's a serious matter. Now, basic statistics, we have already said, we are worried and we are discontinuing integrated statistical products, the value add. We are no longer going to give environmental account products. We don't have the people to do it, we don't have the money to do it. So at the time that the world is talking about environment, and we'll remember the Kyoto Protocol, we'll remember that the nations that are making the world dirty are those that are actually your big economies. We are one of the emerging economies. Other countries like China, we had a meeting now of BRICS, Brazil, China, India, and South Africa. We are the only ones that cannot do environmental accounts. The others are actually continuing. So, but what is it that we will continue to do in 2018-19? We will finalize the legislative reform. We will maintain the quality of basic statistics at all costs. When I say at all costs, it's much more serious. The head of our census, for example, because we don't have staff members to do well, so what we do is we continue to overload people. It's not an exaggeration, Chairperson. We have people collapsing at work, where we literally carry them out with a stretcher out of office. But there's nothing we can do. If we must give basic statistics, we will just keep the people waiting, including myself. So the head of our census, for example, is dealing with census operations. That is his core job, which looks at the contract file. He's also the acting DDG for statistical support and informatics. He's also the project director for the census. So he's doing three jobs at a go, because there's nobody to do the work. My colleague here, Ashwell, is doing two jobs. My colleague here, Celia, is doing two jobs. So they are carrying two titles each. And it's only a matter of time before each of them have to carry three titles. They don't have. Literally, they don't rest. People work Sunday to Sunday. I want this committee to visit us on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon unannounced, or giving us an hour's notice to come to status day. There will be more than 1,000 people at work, because the work is there and we have to do it, and we don't have people to do it. So this issue that we are raising is a serious matter. We will roll out the integrated indicator framework, and we will integrate, innovate, and modernize our business processes. We are busy restructuring and rationalizing, and of course we are reskilling. We want to coordinate and deal with issues of partnerships and designate statistics as official. And of course, Census 2021 is around the corner. We are busy with preparation and we'll be coming to this committee to brief this committee in no time. Chairperson and honorable members, it looks like the next slide is going to be blank, I think.
Thank you very much, Statistician General, for a very detailed presentation, and as well as the concerns that you have raised, we take note of those. I hand over to honorable members for questions, comments, questions of clarity. Honorable Khoza, we'll start with you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to you for the presentation. Chairperson, his last comment, our answer, that his staff overworked, some collapse, I don't know what this means. Does it mean that you have lot of unfunded vacancies? If really people will work and not getting rest, working on Saturdays, Sundays, can you clarify us on that? What is your take regarding your organization structure? Does it speak to your needs, or is it just there? This was just a comment, and it developed a question. The other issue I wanted to talk to is you lose stuff every month. My question would be, do you have a retention strategy? If yes, to what extent is your retention strategy effective? And also, what is your policy with regard to those that have been trained by you? Can you train COSA today after 2 months, COSA can just leave? And with regard to your support to Namibia, what are financial implications there? You have mentioned the SG March with regard to your employment. You spoke of women, black, white, colored Indian, I think that everything with regard to the people living with disabilities today. But you said something about that. But really, I'm very much concerned about this. Because you know, in our constituencies, these are the people that are frequently much into our constituency to say that are being disregarded in all sectors. They are not there. And you can see only maybe in this department here on our side that maybe we say that we are trying, we're in time now. But we expect there was a chance to do it. You also raised the challenge where in the province can they are doing surveys to public content. What is the relationship between you and them? Are you availing yourself? Are you visible in the province? Do you have provincial offices to ensure that if they want to do this, before they can release their number, that they can be able to contact them. I think, Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mutau.
Thank you very much, Chair. Kripa, the question I was going to ask you, and I really need you, skills lead. How is the situation now? That was what I was going to ask you. And you anticipated that question, and you answered, and it gives me quite disappointed. My only question I have to ask you, does the minister know about this? And if she does, what is she doing about this with regard to going to cabinet and hopefully treasury to do something about this? Because I can tell you, the point that you are making about reliable statistics and the reputation that is set they have internationally will evaporate if we don't stop this country.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. And thank you, SG. I want to take you through the book. Page 9 of the book. You have put progress on strategic risk as at on the 30th. Now, if you look at your risk there are 8. But the quality of that content is so bad, SG. See, if you look at number 3, I would say 3B, expand the statistical information base by increasing its depth. And then you go to number 8, expand the statistical information base. So that is not about, because it, for me it's more the synonyms, they seem to be the same. And then on the same point, how are you going to achieve that? Because I always get very worried when the departments, they set themselves towards killing themselves, especially departments like yourself, which does not have enough of the specialized human capital. And if you look at your list number 5, enhance corporate governance and administration. And then you look at list number 6, enhance corporate governance and administration. And then I say there it would be through unauthorized expenditure. And then you give your litigation. But why you decided to do that and separate them is another risk, because for me, you've covered it already in number 5, where you said you're going to enhance that, and then the point 1 to mitigate that, you said through proactive engagement with relevant stakeholders. AG is one of the stakeholders on unauthorized expenditure. So next time, please just this. They need to go through these books, because these books go to the public, and I don't think I can accept the quality of the content like that coming from SG's office. Now, number 7, that you are saying become the employer of choice. Then you're gonna, the rest is a question planning. Now, for me, you know it very well while you were a deputy SG. I've been with you for almost 10 years. We keep on talking about human capital retention strategy. And that is our highest risk. That's why you're working on Saturday and Sunday. So let's put that and remove that becoming the employee of choice. Because back on our party, who are going to challenge you as far as the remuneration package is concerned, and you will lose the your employee. So put your retention strategy. And then we engage on it and see how we can help you. Now, let's go to page 12. You see your CFO. I always fight with him, but some years or some months back I decided not to, because he was doing well. and he has gone back to his corner again. So now I think that we need to go back to Mhlabi Dingana and talk to your Sangoma so that he don't pick up this thing. You see, I'm going through your finances. They're not consistent, SG. They're not at all. We are on the second term, and I'm looking at your expenses, and I'm looking at what is available for the another two quarters. When I'm going through that, then I realize that in every program, either there's overspending or underspending on the second quarter. Now, let me take you through program number one. Program number one, where we're sitting today, this is the second quarter. We have an underspending of 57.7 million, but we are running short of the people. What does this mean? Does this mean we can't get the people from the market? Does this mean, what exactly does this mean? Does this mean we're not yet, because we have this and we're going to buy over 10 billion, and we're going to buy over 10 billion. But you're sitting with 57.7 million on the second quarter, which means the pay you're distributing will sell for up. We're not good. If the pay he is distributing the money is just uneven. I can take it down. Eh? You go to, you know, let me take it to the core functions. Economic statistics and social statistics. Those are the core, which we must make sure that we work up to the teeth. You see, with the two courses, the way we're sitting, both core functions, yes, according to the money that was available to you, and you look at the second quarter, you have understand with, you should, instead of 169.9 million, you should have actually spent 191.6 million, so that at the end of the day you are able to account for the original appropriation. So which means that you are understanding, but those are the core. And on the social statistics, the same thing. You should have actually spent 101 and you have understand 40. So what I'm saying is, your CEO, your CFO must be consistent, and the allocation of the funds must follow the activities. The monitoring of where the house funds are moving is very critical. Can you check again?
Thank you, honorable members. Some questions from my side. SG, you said that the kind of statistics that you are doing, you know, you would have needed to work 10 years or in the organization to do the kind of statistics. So then some of your staff would be very young, the staff who's coming in. So besides the need for additional funding, how do you attract the young people, and how do you market that SA to invite the young people today to work for that SA? And I would like to know if that SA scouts or headhunt youth, especially the methodology. And students or at university, how do you entice them or invite them into your organization? Stats SA must be very good if international organizations, the world, poaches the staff from Stats SA. It means you must be very good. So how do you get these people of this caliber and train them, I mean, for over 10 years? and then have them poached. How do you attract them and those into your organization? So I'd like to echo my colleagues about the retention strategy. Is it really just about the money that they leave? The citizen satisfaction survey, very good survey, but since I've been in this committee, we've only heard that it's the one province that's been doing it. So this is a good survey for other provinces. You don't encourage them to do this survey, to do the citizen satisfaction survey, and encourage the other provinces? And how is it possible that Gauteng could release statistics without your consent? Like, how is it possible? And what would you do about it? What can you do about it to make sure that any official statistics, particularly by government department or provincial department, those statistics have to go through Stats SA first? How would you ensure that? What would you be able to do about it? And those are questions from my side. Over to you, SG, for your responses.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Member.
Apologies, SG. Apologies. It is difficult for me to read and watch the interpreter and look at you at the same time. So just regards with the booklet, could you email me the electronic copy of the booklet, not the presentation, so that I can read the booklet at a later stage electronically. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We will certainly email the booklet. Let me start with the issues that you are raising, Chairperson, Honourable Leibold. The first thing is we have appeared consistently before this committee and indicated that the money that we have been allocated doesn't even cater for the warm bodies. Chair will remember that in the last financial year, we overspent by 76 million rands, which we were able to do internal environments from the money that was supposed to do the community survey dissemination and on an electronic platform, which we couldn't do, which we sent back to conversation of employees, to overspend by 67 million, which is a matter that the Auditor General has made a finding, because we have spent money that was not authorized by Parliament. So what is happening is that it's not money for what we aspire to have. We don't have money to cater for the current warm bodies that we have. The situation is much more serious, because here we have an allocation to status trade that doesn't even cater for people that are already in service. So in January, when last financial year, I had to meet with National Treasury and plead with them that they must not stop salaries of employees, because we will continue to overspend, because it's not a matter that we could sit and watch. So it's not a matter that, it's a serious matter in statistics. It's so serious that since October 2016, we have not hired a single staff member except the statistician general, and we have been losing staff members. And staff members that are leaving status aid, there is a notion, government has decided that we must scale down in terms of the size of the public service. Certainly, scaling down, we have reprioritized, but we are making an assumption that people, when they retire with their jobs, when they resign with their jobs. So if today the head of census is resigned, there is an assumption we are making that when they resign with the census. Yet they don't resign with the census. The country still has to perform the census. So status quo remains with no people to do the work. So if you ask me, we do continue to entice young people to study mathematics and statistics. We do have what we call Maths for Stats. So we have a program which costs us a nominal fee because it doesn't cost us, our staff members, and I will include this question with the number of provincial offices or whether we have provincial offices or not. We have 9 provincial offices. We also have district offices. We used to have 84 district offices because our district collections do not necessarily have to follow your constitutional boundaries. The Statistician General can establish as and when there is a need for collection or in the hard to reach areas or the difficult ones like the rural KwaZulu-Natal or the Eastern Cape, we can decide otherwise on the number of offices. We have 57 now. Out of 84, we now have 87 district offices. Those district offices, other than managing our collections, one of the things they assist us is publicity and outreach to schools, where we interest young learners in different schools as part of our dissemination strategy. We interest them to like and also enjoy the mathematical studies. We have worked with the Department of Education consistently, where we even provide our statisticians to go and train. There is a section in the syllabus that deals with statistics, and statistics is not taught in teacher training colleges. So statistics has been covering that to interest them. But we interest them in general in mathematics, and if they will become statisticians or engineers, it's something else. But our biggest problem is that our internship program, we are no longer taking anybody on internship now. We used to go out to universities and take people on internship, because if we can't even afford to pay salaries of staff members we have, we can no longer even afford to go and want to encourage young people on internship. As regards the KwaZulu-Natal Community Satisfaction Citizen Satisfaction Survey, it's a user-paid survey, like the Census of Commercial Agriculture. It's a user-paid survey. So users come to us. Members, honorable members will remember, we come here every now and then and present our annual what we seek to have so that we can be funded for budget. That forms our work program, which we derive from our strategy. So anything that is not on our work program, if a user tomorrow decides to approach SSA and they say they want us to conduct a survey, because Parliament has been allocated money for us to do, they have to fund it from their coffers. So it's the same with KwaZulu-Natal. They fund it from their coffers. We have approached other provinces, all of them actually. We have documents where we have even written to the Minister of COFDA, where we wanted to get all the provinces to conduct the citizen satisfaction survey. We even learned that it even works with municipalities. Once the money is appropriated to municipalities, COFDA doesn't have a say on the money that the municipalities have. It's their money, because it also includes money that is collected from your rate payers and something. We didn't know about that. We thought COFDA could make a determination and say no municipality should run their own surveys and the like. So we have done everything from our side to want to harvest that money, because we are aware, especially municipalities, they do from time to time deal with their own releases of statistics. And certainly, SSA cannot provide all the statistics the nation needs. Some of them are from administrative records. For example, the statistics that a teacher collects on a daily basis of learners coming to class and not being present or absent, you cannot have SSA sitting in classes every day. We need to have those administrative records. Now, if the Department of Education chooses to release those administrative records, or a nurse in a neighborhood, like police stations these days, police stations every day, when I've been going out to the way they collect their data, they have what we call a radio system. So when there is a, and it's all over in all provinces, if there is a crime incident occurring in, for example, in the Rembet area in Limpopo, you hear it on their radio system being reported. So you do have sometimes double reporting of that crime statistic. But police are not statisticians. But we cannot replace the administrative function. We only need to harvest their data. Now, data comes in four levels. Firstly, you have what you call poor statistics. That is, in Auditor General's terms, I would say this is where you have a disclaimer. The Statistician General cannot even express opinion. A good example of that is when in a place called Libode, there were more cash heists than any other part in the country. It's simply because the policeman at the station, when someone said there was pickpocketing of 20 rand, they wrote cash heist 20 rand, cash heist 15 rand, cell phone heist. So there were so many heists in Libode than anywhere else. So we had to sit with the police and agree that we want to graduate them from poor statistics to manageable statistics, acceptable statistics. Now, the police have now, the results that are released by SAPS now, are now what we call quality statistics. So you move from poor to acceptable statistics to quality statistics. The fact that you have quality statistics doesn't make statistics official. Official statistics in South Africa is only released by the Statistician General. Once we put a stamp of the Statistician General, that's when it's official. What makes it official is the law that you have given us as Parliament. The law that you have given us is that once it enters the official realm, it forms what we call a theory. Once there are 2 points that must not be disrupted going beyond, the state must fund that. Nobody, not even Parliament, can stop a theory. Not even National Treasury can refuse to fund the Statistician General and stop a theory. It's illegal. And this is the law you have given us as Parliament. So you have given us a law as Parliament, but the same law is being undermined by not being funded. And there is nothing we can do. Statistics cannot do anything. We can only sit and watch, and what we do is we will degenerate statistics from being official to quality. And once we degenerate it from being official to quality, it means I can't put my signature on it as official. And the worst case scenario is when it becomes poor statistics, where I will decide I will not publish. And that is a serious or a worse matter scenario. So if you ask me, we have appeared before this committee and said we want to strengthen our legislation. The reason why we appeared here 2 weeks ago and we have consistently said we want legislative reform is to curb on those kinds of behavior by anybody, like a PFMA of a sort, where nobody can deal with matter statistics, including if it falls in the 4 categories, poor, acceptable, quality, or official, without working with the Statistician General. Because other than the issue of them producing their own statistics, the third act that you have given us as Parliament says that we must curb duplication and unnecessary wastage of resources, which we are not able to curb because it gives us that, but it doesn't give us the authority to enforce it. So that's why we want legislative reform. Now, let me go back to Honorable Khosa. Honorable Khosa has raised that certainly we have 3,500 positions that they should be having in our structure. Out of those 3,500 positions, we are talking about closer to about 500, 400 and something, that are vacant as we are talking. And out of these positions that are vacant, we have met with National Treasury. And National Treasury said, we will not fund all your positions. Tell us which ones are critical. So we said we have a strategy that has been approved by Parliament. So it means we must go back to our strategy and trade off everything that we will not do. That is why when we appeared before Parliament to present the work program, we indicated to this committee that these are the things that we will no longer be able to deliver, which are on our strategy, but we can't do on our work program. Having said that, then we went to National Treasury and said, we will need 300 of those positions. National Treasury said, no, in the consultations, we will not be able to fund those. We went back to 147 positions. These are your core critical, which would allow people to do 2 jobs at a go. So if we hired 147, We would hire people who would have to carry two jobs at a go. Now, indications are that we are not getting funding for those positions as we are talking now, even the 147. So technically, if people continue to resign, there is nothing that we can do. We are sitting there like a lame duck, and we will continue to watch people resign, but we will continue to report to Parliament that these are the issues. So retention strategy doesn't work, because if you don't have money to fund your current staff members that are in your establishment, and you do not have money to stop those who are leaving, no matter how much you want to retain, we try to send them on training here and there. But the training we send them, we can't send them for long. We try to interest them. There is even two consecutive years where we did this, what do we call this, performance bonuses, where we said, we took a decision as senior management that we will not take performance bonuses, because even if people have performed very well, there is no money. Rather, we cater for positions than pay performance bonuses. Now, the problem is here. Maybe for people at the senior level who have been with CSS for long, they will try and stay. But the junior staff members who have been there for 5 years, if they come there and for 2, 3 years or 5 years, and you have some of them good and top performers, they are not getting any promotion, they are not getting any performance bonus, they are waiting for a CPI aligned issue, and there's a bank there that is busy saying we'll pay you 2, 3 times the salary. They are not going to be allegiance to the organization, no matter how much an allegiance you have. The second issue is panic, where staff members know that CSSA doesn't have a budget. And because it doesn't have a budget to take up a warm body, it's possible. And this, the organized labor has already met with us. Organized labor has come to see us and have asked us, since you don't have a budget, are you going to retrench? We said we don't have the power to retrench. They've asked us consistently. So the panic is there, and people won't stay in an organization that has a panic. Our head of civil, as I'm seated here today, our head of vital statistics that helps us to do media estimates for your birth and death is resigning. And there's nothing we can do. We must just sit and watch them and they leave. So that's how, so the retention is a very complex issue in this case where you don't have money. Because there are things you can do with training, everything, but if you can't promote people and they sit in the same position for years, they will leave. It's real. The support we do to other agencies, there are no cost implications, because if we assist a country like Namibia or Botswana, or we assist an agency like South Australia or something, they fund everything. They fund cost of travel, they fund accommodation, and all the pediums that are required. In some cases, your poorer nations cannot fund. What they do, they go to UNDP or to the ADB and they fund. So we do actually are able to cover that. People with disability, we have actually indicated that consistently we're sitting at 1.2%. We have now improved to 1.4%. It's a matter that we are watching very closely. And of course, our relationship with provinces in relation to surveys is as good as we are able to enforce it. If we can't enforce it strongly with legislative reform, it's not going to assist as much. Minister, she is certainly aware, and even the previous minister, Honorable Hadele, he has been aware. We have raised it on numerous occasions. We continue to raise it, and this is a matter that we have to raise. As regards pages 9 and 10, Honorable Dubaza, the columns, the first column is not a risk, it's a strategic objective. So a strategic objective could talk to so many risks. So you could have a strategic objective, for example, in terms of increased stakeholder focus and communication and marketing, that talks to different risks. The problem is, if we lump all of them, all strategic risks, and not all objectives in one place, some of the risks will not be illuminated. So we do, from time to time, raise the issues. Strategic objectives, you can repeat them from time to time. As long as when it comes to risk, and mitigation, you are not repeating anything that relates to that. And of course, there was an issue in relation to our budget, how we are spending on page 12. What is happening is that we are in a project mode, but I will let my colleagues deal with that specifically. When you deal in a project mode, there are certain services that you acquire, like the issue of vehicles. So if we go for collection in this order, we do not pay our service providers because we go to hiring companies, for example, and that's to hire vehicles, and we acquire about 100 or about 300 vehicles because we can't keep them in our books because it wouldn't be sustainable. When we go to the hiring company and we run through a survey, even if a quarter comes to an end, we don't run our surveys, our projects, quarter to quarter. If you run a quarterly labor force survey, you have rules of collection that you collect from the beginning of this quarter to this quarter, you end there. But if you are dealing with your general household survey or the Census of Commercial Agriculture, it runs throughout a year. So you cannot say, because I've come to an end, a quarter I must pay. Because if you pay, then you will pay for services that haven't been finished being rendered. So that will become a lot more irregular. If you deal with issues like software licenses that you renew, you cannot renew on quarter to quarter. They have to run a lifespan, at least software licenses. Some of them you have to pay upfront before you access. But our biggest problem is our project nature, because every survey, if we do the quarterly labor force survey, general household survey, if we do the census of agriculture, if we are looking at compilations of data that comes from mining or from energy, it's done on project basis. If it were to follow annual or financial year quarters to the hill, it would actually fail because statistical collection doesn't necessarily do that. But we do then go in account. But my colleagues will go to the specific area which actually has caused those disjunctures in terms of over expenditure or under expenditure.
Can you give me an opportunity before? Yeah. No, I hear what you are saying, SG. You see, our main concern here is that us as the committee, even before it was elected, we were very concerned about human capital. As a result, we are all the way out talking to the seniors who are supposed to allocate the better money for the human capital within the department. And if you find this, and you are explaining what you are explaining it to me now, that your budget is more project-based, it is confusing. It is confusing in that sense. Yes, if it's a project-based, but it is allocated according to the program, something in the book, in the black and the white, it's under the program. So which means you have to change the model. You have to put as it is on top, and you need to substantiate at the end. That's problem number one. These are the projects. Tell us a story so that we are able to back you. Because right now, I don't even need a further explanation, because right now, I'm seeing underspending and overspending according to the quarter, because that's what the PFMA is saying. It is sent to this committee to monitor it quarterly. Now, it is going to help us as a SSA to change the model. We put as is because we're following the PFMA, but at the bottom, let us have notes. We say problem one. Then we talk about that. Then we talk about the project. Then we're talking about the outstanding, so that everybody understands. So I don't need a further explanation from your colleague.
Certainly, Chairperson, that should be added to the narrative. We will actually make such additions.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for your presentation. I note that Honorable Kasim has arrived. Where are you? Welcome, Honorable Kasim. Welcome. And thank you, Status A. We will make sure that in our report that the committee secretary takes note or notes the urgency of the funding, the vacancies, and the various risks faced by Sister 6 South Africa, so that the Minister in DPME and National Treasury is aware of the seriousness that they need to pay attention to this situation in Status A. Thank you very much. I'm going to hand over to DPME to do their report. We note that the DG could not be here, so we have another person presenting on her behalf.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, yes. The DG asked me to introduce our presentation, and I will also be throughout the presentation asking Mr. Magale to my right to present the performance information, and Mr. Nomlala sitting over there to present the HR information. You can go to the first one. You can go to the next one. So the slide introduces again our mandate and what this department is about. I think the committee is very familiar with this already, and I will not stay on this slide. The highlights of performance information as at the end of the second quarter, as I indicated, Mr. Madale will present this part. Mr. Nomlala will then take over on the HR stuff, and I will present the last bit on the financial information.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. On the performance side, we are highlighting some of the work that we have undertaken since the first half of the year. One of the key things that we have achieved was the development of the annual mandate paper, which was approved by Cabinet. The other initiative that we have taken is the development of a framework for monitoring of SOEs. We also, in partnership with DPSA, developed a quality assurance checklist to ensure compliance of the PMDS for HODs and DGs. We are also in the process of evaluating the national youth policy with a view to ensuring its effective implementation as per NDC targets. We continue to assist the President in supervising the work of government through the work of the various IMCs, for instance, in Northwest. We have also started the process of developing a 25-year review of the country's progress in democracy. In terms of the following slide, this slide just shows the various programs which are currently serving and the various targets that were there for the quarter. This information is repeated in tabular form. It shows that in the particular quarter we had 37 targets, we have achieved 25, and 12 of these were not achieved, which constitutes 67%. This slide simply shows the performance graphically. It also shows that the number of targets we achieved were 67. Now, we will be talking specifically to the targets that were not achieved in program one. We had set ourselves a target of maintaining the vacancy rate at 10%. We have missed this target. And the reasons are provided there, and the head of HR will speak to the details thereof. We also set ourselves having the result of the assessment, performance assessment of staff communicated by 8 September, but we need that deadline, and this will be communicated in the next quarter, so that the target towards annual, the achievement of the annual target will be met. We also, on technicality, failed to achieve the target with regard to progress on risk. This is basically because it did not serve in the risk management committee. And this will be corrected in the third quarter. In problem two, we have planned to convene a planning forum. It did not happen, but it happened after the quarter, so it has been achieved, just that it was not achieved as planned. Program 3 has a number of targets that have not been achieved. The non-achievement of this target is basically based on the technicality. So we have planned to report quarterly or utilizing the revised POA guidelines, but then on the revised guidelines then required us to report by annually instead of quarterly. So technically this target was not achieved. That technicality also extends to the second target that has not been achieved related to guidelines or outcome coordination used to guide the functioning of the implementation forum. The third one is a report on the review of implementation forum. This target was not met, but the exercise was initiated and we have distributed questionnaires to collect information on how they are functioning. Implementation forum, just to remind ourselves, are the forums where discussions take place about the progress on the implementation of the MTSF target. We could also not produce the report on the functioning of SOPs and SOCs. The reason thereof is because we have not finalized the framework for the monitoring of those. We are currently, as I've indicated, engaging with the various partners to try and come up with this framework. This exercise is proving more difficult than we thought at the beginning when we took this initiative to start monitoring how they are functioning. However, it's something that we believe we'll be able to conquer going forward. In program 4, all targets that were set for the quarter were met. In program 5, we have 2 targets that were not met. The one relates to customer satisfaction survey showing 80% of client satisfaction. Here, the challenge again is the manner in which we have set the target, because we were measuring how customers, whether customers are satisfied or not with regard to the services that they receive. However, the methodology that we're using is proving difficult because we do not have control over whether citizens are happy or not with regard to responses that they get from line functioning department. So we will revise this methodology going forward. The other one relates to conducting 5 visits and producing briefing notes on the Atola and Izimbizo. We only conducted 1 in Bizo, and the reason is because of the many commitments that were not planned for, such as the Northwest initiatives that were being requested to intervene on by the President. In Program 6, we plan to produce three knowledge products. This target was not met, however, we produced 12 products, which mainly relate to needs, the National Income Dynamic Studies. This will be launched in the fourth quarter. Again, the target related to the POA, the publication of the POA in our website has not taken place. This is due to the reason I alluded to earlier on, that cabinet took the decision that we must report biannually instead of quarterly. Program 7, all targets were met. I'll now give Mr. Namlala to the demand source.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Members. I'm going to address the issue of the human resources. Our target is 10% and we have not met it. The reason has advanced is the fact that we have staff exit of six officials during the quarter, but we have filled 25 posts during the same quarter. Now, Chair, the recruitment plan that was developed and approved is yielding good results for us. We've been steadily reducing the vacancy rate. If you look at the beginning of this quarter, from quarter one, Chair, we were at 17.9%, and currently we are at 14.2%, which is a reduction of 3.7%. Then the current vacancy rate is at 14.2%, but Chair, by the end of 31st of October, we were at 14%, and when I look at my stats now, we are at 11% by the 1st of November. But that report will be presented in the next quarter. Then, Chair and committee members, you can see that it has been going down our vacancy rate. And as we promised in the previous engagement, we will meet the 10% target by the end of the third quarter. When it comes to employment equity, in the department, the applicants generally are over. There is an over-representation of 7.7%. Then the colors are under-represented by 4.7%. Indians are over-represented by 1.1%. Whites are underrepresented by 4.1%. Then, Chair, in terms of gender, the males are underrepresented by 8.8%. The females are overrepresented by 8.8%. Then, at SMS level, Chair, the Africans are underrepresented by 1.2%. The colors are underrepresented by 6.5%. Indians are overrepresented by 6.9%. And whites are overrepresented by 0.9%. If we look at the gender chart, the males at SMS level are underrepresented by 1.1%. And the females are overrepresented by the same percentage, which is 1.1%. In terms of disability, Chair, all along we've been over the target of 2%, but one of our officials resigned about 2 months ago, and now we are at 1.9%
we are underrepresented. But here we've already appointed our head of legal with disabilities. I'm sure when we report for this quarter, we'll be back to our 2.3%. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This slide is a summary of what happened in the adjustment budget. There were quite a number of shifts, and I'll get to the reasons for the under-expenditure and shift in the last slide. It's also the additional allocation mentioned by the CEO of the NYDA of 30.6 million. I'm sorry, it's incorrect in the narrative, but it's correct in the shift column. So there's quite a number of movements between the branches. So from administration, we gave some money to other branches. Most of the savings in administration was due to the fact that we have not yet procured additional office accommodation, or DPW has not yet procured additional office accommodation for the department. And then under evidence and knowledge systems, there was a saving on the National Income Dynamics Study, which we've also allocated. A significant portion of the additional allocation will be used for the 25 million. You can see that the underspending against drawings, we've spent 84% of our drawings to date and 40% of the budget. Ideally, we should have been around 50% by now of the total budget. There's a significant underspending on compensation of employees, as you can see. That was due to the initial slow start in filling posts as the structure was only approved in January, but as Mr. Nolala explained, we've now caught up and we are well on our way to meet the 10% vacancy rate. There was an additional factor in the slow spending on goods and services that we had no contracts in place with CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, since April. Those contracts have since been concluded and signed, and we have already, during this month, processed most of the invoices from 1 April. So the expenditure will be significantly better in quarter three. One of the services that CETA provides is the back office of the presidential hotline, which is about 13 million rand a year, so that does have quite a big impact on our expenditure. So now that we start paying them, the expenditure will be better. Our projections for the end of the financial year is that we will spend 93% of compensation, 96% on goods and services. We will spend everything that we plan to spend on capital expenditure and as well as on transfers and subsidies. So we project that overall will be around 96%. I think that was the last one. Thank you, Chief. There are some additional slides I think were distributed that contain more detailed information on the actual performance information. I don't think it's necessary for us to go through them. Those are the details of the achieved and not achieved targets. Mr. Madale has only dealt with the not achieved targets.
Yes, my honourable director. No, Chair, I was waiting to hear why so many zero men.
So under administration, the 15 million that we took out of administration was because of the savings on, primarily because of the savings on office accommodation. So we are still waiting for DPW to procure additional office accommodation, so obviously we will not be spending the money on office accommodation this year. We've therefore freed up this money for primarily the 25-year review, but also for other projects in other units, also for research projects in the National Planning Commission, etc. And then the same with, there was the National Income Dynamic Study declared a saving of approximately 8 million rand that they will not be using to finalize the study, which meant that we didn't have to make any payments to them in this financial year. This money was also allocated to support the 25-year review as well as other projects in the department. So that was the primary reason for the shift in IMF. And of course, the 50 million is the additional money we got for NYDA.
Okay, thank you, DPME, for the presentation. As part of my question, I'm not clear on the Sorry, I just need to find the term. Your introduction to the citizen-based monitoring. I wasn't clear if it's a survey problem, response problem, so if you could respond to that as part of your answers. Honourable members, now it's your opportunity for comments, questions. Honourable Koza, are you ready with the mic?
Yes, sir, thank you very much, I'm ready with it. But I don't have much questions to ask in this presentation, but to thank the presenter for the presentation. One, I want maybe to check, I wanted to know if ever in their presentation would one day have a presentation that does not have anything to do with feeling poor. That is my only question. Because I'm asking this because when you look at their target, it's only target 7 and 4 where they at least 100% achieve. Then my take would be that because of the challenge of feeling poor, unlike SSA, who do not have money, those who have money do not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. It's probably right, very right. I'm sure you probably read that you're not set the same. My question is sort of related. Given the targets not achieved in this kind of quarter and your projections, which look actually quite good, what makes you so sure that you will actually achieve the projected targets?
Okay, I forgot one more question that I had. There are no issues so far with the 30-day payment rule. So thank you. Your response is DPME to members.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the filling of posts, I think Mr. Mbala promised that this is the absolute last time we'll be above the 10%. So you can hold him accountable next time if he does say if he says anything else. I think we're on track. We're filling the posts. I think there are a few senior management posts that are still in the process of being filled. That takes a bit longer to fill them. But at the lower levels, I think we have caught up. And I'm very uncomfortable saying this to the minister, it's a good issue here. On the achievement of projected targets, I think most of them are timing issues, and Mr. Madalik can add to that. We have a number of projects that normally materialize early at the end of the financial year. There are also some ICT projects that we've been implementing that will only materialize at the end of the financial year. That's why we will are confident that the expenditure will increase. And I think, Mr. Madalik, you can add, I think, on the majority of targets, it's a timing issue. And then on 30-day payments, we pay our service providers on average around 5 to 6 days, working days. We put no service providers paid after 30 days. Mr. Madalik, can you take the question on the CDM and then also on the achievement of targets at the end of the year?
Thank you, Chair. On the CDM target, as I've indicated, it's more about the methodology issue. So we do the survey to check whether citizens are happy with the services that they receive from government. And we have set ourselves a target of 80%. At least 80% of the citizens' response should say they are satisfied. Now we are saying because we do not have control, if citizens are complaining about rules, for instance, it's not the DPME that is responsible for providing rules. It is the relevant department. So our targeting was a bit too ambitious. So we are saying, as a remedy, we are going to review our methodology of conducting the survey, and instead of raising the presidential hotline services or responses to by department to presidential hotline cases, will be monitoring, will be rather focusing on the agents that are administering the survey. So it's the issue of methodology more than anything else. On whether the targets are going to be achieved come the end of the year, most of the targets that were reported on, some of them were already achieved. However, some of them will not be achieved simply because of the targeting issue. So for instance, I've indicated that we have planned to report on a quarterly basis in terms of the implementation of the NDC through the MTSF. Cabinet took the decision that instead of us reporting quarterly, we must report biannually. So technically, in compliance with the AGSA requirement, we can't say we have achieved. We simply say we did not achieve and give the reason for variation. Thank you.
Honorable Matibasani?
No, thank you, Chair. I didn't have a question until the presenter just provoked me. I don't understand, Honorable Chair. Status A, DPNE, a house in the grid. Now, what makes me not to understand is problem number five. That problem number five is the hotline. It is a means or an instrument of collecting information to ensure that citizens are satisfied with whatever services government is providing to our citizens. So the DPNE, my understanding, its core function towards that is to monitor and evaluate. Why does SSA use that information? So the reason of revisiting to a point where you design a methodology for something when you have put, you are in the same house, you are the children of the same woman and the man there. And what is this duplication? On the other side, you are saying you should not duplicate duplication, but you are using this duplication, that you can put in the solution of what is that you have to do.
Chair, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Masbaz. I'm not sure if SSA would operate at this level of, and maybe the SG can assist us. Here, my understanding is that we run a presidential hotline, and citizens use the presidential hotline to report or comment government. Now, we said we want to see how efficient is this hotline, of how people feel about the hotline, rather. Okay, we were measuring how citizens feel about the services that they receive from government. Now, in this instance, we are saying we are going to be rating how they feel about the services that they receive from the hotline. Thank you.
I see if she's handed up.
Chair and honorable members, it's true that SSA cannot provide all the data needs that the country has. Even in established or developed nations, you cannot have a statistical agency that has all the data needs, because there is a difference between official statistics
and management information system. And management information systems should be collected regularly by different agencies or businesses. Even here in South Africa, there are so many businesses that are collecting that. However, what we could do is that if it becomes a regularity, especially for a government department, then we could assist them with the technical expertise of strengthening the survey so that when they do it, they report at a quality level. It's not just statistics or poor statistics. But what they are doing, certainly they can do that, and we will work with them to strengthen the quality. But we can't be doing everything. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have one more question related to the 25-year review. The deadline for the 25-year review, so that as a committee we can prepare before we rise at the end of Parliament. So if you could just provide us with the deadline for the 25-year review, please.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we hope to have this done by the end of December. There's a lot of work that needs to go in there, so I would hope that by January, the end of January, we would be able to do something.
Deputy Chair of the NYDA?
Thank you very much, Chair. I normally don't like to ask questions to the President of the Act, but there's a format of reporting that confused me very much, when you are putting a finger on the HR presentation. There's something they speak about over-representation of women. I'm quite confused. My confusion, Chair, emanates from the fact that from where I am seated, my understanding was that when we measure some of these statistics, we want to see how we are addressing those who were formerly marginalized. So we look at minimum numbers. So when we're speaking about 50% representation, we mean minimum. So if there's more, we are even heavier. Now, I see that it comes out very negative here, like there's over-representation of women, and as if women at some point will fall. You know, I'm not sure what this over-representation data is supposed to communicate what exactly. And this goes for many other points that have over and under. I understand under, but I don't understand the over. I'm very confused at what our budget department is trying to do with this reporting and what kind of a message I'm trying to send. Because it comes out very negative to me. And it says we have a past that has always been balanced. Things are just, you know, skewed and bitter, and we are trying to bring them back on balance. And that's not what I'm trying to do. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take that as a comment. You don't need to respond to it. Take note of what you said. If we see the number of males or more, we never say it's over or under. We leave it like it is. So just take note of what the Deputy Chair of NYDA said, that we need to balance the imbalances of the past. So if it's more, rather than, you know, don't say over in a negative way. So rather take that as a comment. You don't need to respond to that now. Okay, and then we've come to the end of DPME's presentation. Thank you very much for your presentation. We take note of all the concerns raised, the issues raised. We take note of those. Number 6, we will do that at the next meeting. There are no announcements specific to committee work, but we have an announcement for lunch. It will be served at the restaurant, which is upstairs at 12:30. So thank you very much for everyone who came to present. Thank you for your presentation. Honourable members, thank you, colleagues,
for your presence and participation in the meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you. Go well. Thank you.